Picture the shuttle landing facility at Kennedy Space Center. 15,000 feet of concrete, wide enough to land the space shuttle, and empty since the last orbiter rolled to a stop in 2011. Now picture a small winged vehicle, about the size of a business jet, dropping out of the sky with no engine running, flaring over the numbers and touching down on that same runway on its own landing gear. That is the whole promise of the machine we are talking about today. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector, this is Clear Direct, and today we need to talk about the Dream Chaser, because it is the closest thing to a flyable space plane that any pilot in this audience is likely to see land at a normal airport in their lifetime. Let's break this down. Before we get into the engineering, one quick word from the people helping keep this segment on the air. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument-rated CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. If you have got a milestone worth keeping, or you know someone who just knocked one out, go take a look. AviationSoul.com. So, what actually is the Dream Chaser? It is a reusable spaceplane built by Sierra Space, which spun out of Sierra Nevada Corporation. The first vehicle is named Tenacity, and the design category it belongs to is the part every pilot should find interesting. It is a lifting body. A lifting body is an airplane that has almost thrown away the wings and turned the entire fuselage into the wing. The shape itself generates lift. If you have ever seen photos of those stubby wedge-shaped research craft NASA flew out at Edwards in the 1960s, the M2F2, the HL10, that is the family tree. In fact, the Dream Chaser traces its aerodynamic shape almost directly back to a NASA design called the HL-20 from the late 1980s, and the HL-20 itself was studied from photographs of a Soviet test vehicle called the Bor-4 that got fished out of the Indian Ocean. So this shape has a long, strange Cold War lineage. Nobody sketched it on a napkin last year. Here is why the lifting body matters, and here is what most people miss. The Dream Chaser does not launch like an airplane. It launches like a spacecraft. It sits on top of a rocket, a United Launch Alliance Vulcan Centaur, and it goes straight up, vertically. Its wings are actually folded to fit inside the rocket's nose cone, the payload fairing, and they swing out once it is clear of the atmosphere. But it comes home like an airplane. It re-enters, it glides, and it lands horizontally on a runway on wheels. And that combination, vertical launch, horizontal runway landing, is the entire engineering bet. Why go to all that trouble? Why not just splash down under parachutes in the ocean like a Dragon capsule or an Apollo command module? Capsules work. They are simpler. So what does the runway buy you? The data tells an interesting story here, and it comes down to two things: gentleness and access. Start with gentleness. When a capsule comes back, it hits the atmosphere and it decelerates hard. The crew and the cargo can feel something in the range of 4 Gs, sometimes more. Then it hits the water, and even a good splashdown is a solid thump. For a person coming back from months in orbit with deconditioned muscles and bones, that is a lot. For science cargo, delicate experiments, live specimens, protein crystals, that thump can matter. A lifting body re-entry is different because the shape is flying the whole way down, generating lift. It can spread that deceleration out. The Dream Chaser is designed to bring its load home at around 1.5 Gs. That is less than a steep turn some of you have flown. It touches down on a runway at airliner-like speeds instead of slamming into the sea. For fragile cargo, that is a genuinely different ride. Now access. This is the part that should make a pilot smile. A capsule in the ocean needs a fleet. Recovery ships, helicopters, divers, a whole small navy standing by in the right patch of water with the right weather. A runway landing needs a runway. Sierra Space designs the Dream Chaser to land on any runway certified for a commercial airliner. Roughly 10,000 feet of pavement, which means in principle your spacecraft can taxi to a stop, get met by a ground crew with a tug, and have its time-critical cargo pulled out and into a lab within a few hours, at a normal airfield near normal infrastructure. That is the vision. Space cargo that comes back to an airport instead of a splash zone. Now, who is this for, and what is it actually going to do first? The first job is not people, it is groceries. Sierra Space holds a NASA contract under the second round of the Commercial Resupply Services Program, CRS-2, to fly cargo to the International Space Station. So, the early Dream Chaser missions are uncrewed cargo runs. Supplies up, experiments, and trash down for the cargo version. There is a second piece bolted onto the back that you should know about. It is called the Shooting Star Module. Think of it as a disposable cargo trunk. It carries extra pressurized and unpressurized cargo. It does some of the maneuvering, and unlike the space plane itself, it is expendable. When the mission is done, the shooting star separates and burns up in the atmosphere, often loaded with station garbage, while the winged dream chaser survives and glides home to be flown again. And reuse is the other half of the pitch. Sierra Space talks about flying each space plane many times, on the order of 15 missions. That is the same logic driving the whole modern launch industry. The airplane you can fly again and again is cheaper than the vehicle you throw in the ocean. Airlines have known that forever. Space is finally catching up, so that is the promise. Gentle re-entry, runway access, reusable airframe, cargo now, and maybe crew later. It is a genuinely elegant idea. Now let's be honest about the other side of the ledger, because I promised you balanced, and hype without caveats is not what we do on this show. The first honest problem is the timeline. This vehicle has been coming soon for a very long time. Sierra Nevada won a version of this concept in NASA competitions well over a decade ago. The program lost out on the crew contract that went to SpaceX and Boeing back in 2014 and pivoted to cargo. First flight has been forecast and then slipped, and then forecast again more times than I can comfortably count. If you have followed it in Aviation Week or Space News over the years, you have watched that date walk to the right again and again. As of this year, Tenacity has been through a long environmental test campaign at NASA's facility in Sandusky, Ohio, getting shaken and blasted with acoustic and thermal loads to prove it can survive launch. But it still has not flown to orbit. So when someone tells you the space plane is here, the accurate answer is, it is very nearly here. And it has been very nearly here for a while. That is not cynicism. That is just the record. The second honest problem is complexity. And this is the engineer in me talking wings and wheels and a thermal protection system and folding mechanisms and a runway landing all add mass and parts and failure modes that a simple capsule just does not have. Every one of those folding wing hinges is something that has to work perfectly after the vibration of launch and the heat of re-entry. A capsule under parachutes is crude by comparison, and crude is often reliable, and there is a very concrete reminder of that complexity in the program's own history. Back in 2013, an earlier atmospheric test article was dropped from a helicopter out at Edwards to practice the approach and landing. The glide was fine, the flare was fine, and then on touchdown, the left main landing gear did not deploy properly, the vehicle skidded and it went off the side of the runway. Nobody was hurt, it was uncrewed, and the flight test data was actually good, but it is a very pilot-shaped lesson. The hardest part of flying is often not the flying. It is the last 3 feet. The third honest caveat is scope. Let's be clear about what this is and is not. It is a small vehicle. The cargo it carries is measured in thousands of kilograms, not the enormous tonnage people imagine when they hear the word starship. Dream Chaser is not trying to be a heavy hauler or a Mars ship. It is trying to be a precise, gentle, reusable delivery van that lands at Land Airport. Judge it against that goal, not against a rocket the size of a building. So who is actually building this, and where does it sit in the wider picture? Sierra Space is the prime. United Launch Alliance provides the ride-up on Vulcan. NASA is the anchor customer with the station cargo contract, and NASA facilities have hosted a lot of the testing. And the reason this matters beyond one company is that the Dream Chaser is the last real survivor of the spaceplane idea in the American commercial fleet. Think about the landscape. SpaceX flies capsules, Boeing Starliner is a capsule, Blue Origin's orbital plans center on capsules. The runway landing, wings and wheels approach that the space shuttle made famous, basically went extinct when the orbiters retired. The Dream Chaser is the one program carrying that torch into the commercial era. If it works, the spaceplane lives. If it does not, the capsule wins the argument, probably for a generation. And here is the part that ties it back to us, to pilots. Everything hard about this vehicle is a flying problem. Energy management with no engine, hitting a runway from orbital speed with exactly one shot at the landing, no go around, ever. A vehicle that is a spacecraft on the way up and a very heavy, very fast glider on the way down. The space shuttle pilots used to say they were flying a brick with wings on final. The Dream Chaser is smaller, but the fundamental job is the same. Manage your energy, respect the machine, and grease the one landing you're given. That is a skill set this audience understands in its bones. So where do I land on it? Honestly, I think the Dream Chaser is one of the more beautiful pieces of engineering in the business right now. And I also think it has to stop being nearly here and start being here. The idea is sound. The heritage is real. The physics works. What is left is the brutal, unglamorous work of proving a complicated machine over and over until the schedule stops slipping. I want it to fly. I want to see wings on a runway coming back from space. But I will believe the timeline when Tenacity is on orbit and turning final for real. If you want to dig into the details yourself, the reporting from Aviation Week and Space News has followed this program closely for years, and Sierra Space and NASA both put out solid technical material on the design and the test campaign. Worth your time. You can find more of what we do over at radiohanger.com. I'm Vector. Keep thinking about how the machine actually works, and I'll see you on the next one.